AM Amory and WBZH 910 AM W245 CT Hayward. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
Going on in the world, the state,
and in your own backyard.
This is a Civic Media Network News Update.
It's 8 o'clock. Good morning. I'm Terry Bell, and here's what Wisconsin needs to know. 10 fake Trump electors from Wisconsin face a civil trial next year. Pete Schwabe reports.
A Dane County judge denied a motion to throw out the case yesterday. The liberal firm of Law Forward is suing. It says the fake electors and lawyers who advised them committed a host of crimes, including impersonating a public official and engaging in a conspiracy. The judge's order comes about a week after the U.S. Justice Department filed federal criminal charges against Donald Trump for allegedly trying to overturn the 2020 election. The indictment says the plot relied on Republican electors in a handful of swing states, including Wisconsin. Last month, Michigan became the first state to charge fake electors in criminal court. Wisconsin Attorney General Josh Call won't say if he plans to file criminal charges here. Pete Schwabe, Civic Media News.
Election workers say they're still being harassed by people who think Donald Trump won in 2020. David Becker is with the Center for Election Innovation and Research.
They are still dealing with this stuff. They are still suffering. They are still being harassed. They're still being attacked. That's the state we're in now. In early August, 15 months before a presidential election.
Becker says Americans are eager for an outcome in the court cases stemming from 2020. When that happens, he says he hopes Republicans and Democrats come to some agreements.
That we as Americans can say, regardless of who engaged in these activities, if they are proven to be true beyond a reasonable doubt in a court of law, if those are true, can't we all as Americans agree that this has gone too far, that this should never happen again?
There's a bipartisan bill in the state legislature to make it a felony to attack an election worker in Wisconsin. The head of Wisconsin's Wildlife Agency says he's happy with the state's revised wolf management plan. Nate Wegehout reports.
The latest draft says anywhere from 800 to 1,200 wolves is the right number to keep Wisconsin's wolf population healthy and sustainable. The Department of Natural Resources Board met in Viroqua Wednesday. DNR Secretary Adam Payne told the gathering the plan is based on good science. Not everyone agrees. WisPolitics quotes people at the meeting who complain about feeling left out of the process. Farmers, hunters, and conservationists all want to say. The DNR is accepting written comments through September 12th. The DNR's board is set to vote on the plan in late October. Nate Wegehout, Civic Media News.
The Cream Puff Pavilion at the Wisconsin State Fair is getting a makeover. The state of Wisconsin will spend $12.5 million to modernize and expand the building in time for next year's fair. The pavilion is one of the oldest and busiest on the state fairgrounds. And that's what Wisconsin needs to know. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
For Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK, I'm Jimmy Cuska. Here's what you need to know in Amory. Hearings this week are over in the Lily Peters homicide case in Chippewa County, and now a judge will decide next year whether the lone suspect, a 15-year-old boy, will be tried as an adult or if the case will go to juvenile court. The teenager is charged with murdering 10-year-old Lily Peters last year and leaving her body in the woods near her Chippewa Falls home. Testimony in reverse waiver hearings this week focused on the boy's mental health and treatment options available in state prison. If the boy is convicted of homicide as an adult, he would serve a mandatory life sentence in prison. If the case moves to juvenile court, he would be under supervision for the next 10 years. Judge Stephen Gibbs will decide in January where the case will go. Two homicide suspects in Eau Claire County are being tried separately. Brandon Gaston and Tracy Clark are both accused of killing an Altoona man and hiding his corpse. The body of 79-year-old Dennis Shoddy was found decapitated in the Rock River in Rockford, Illinois last April. Gaston will appear in court later this month. Clark's next court appearance is in October. For Civic Media News, I'm Jimmy Cuska.
The Brewers take on the White Sox. Good morning, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers opening a 9-game road trip tonight in Chicago against the White Sox. First pitch at 7:10. Milwaukee's Willie Adames has struggled at the plate since getting hit in the face with a foul ball earlier this season. On Wednesday, he crushed a home run. Manager Craig Counsell's reaction.
Just happy for him, I think, as much as anything. You know, he's so important to the group and us being a good baseball team. And so, you know, it's always hard to watch players struggle a little bit.
Corbin Burns on the mound tonight for Milwaukee. NFL, Roger Goodell is coming to Lambeau Field before Monday's Packers training camp practice to officially announce the NFL draft coming to Green Bay in 2025. The commissioner will be joined by team president Mark Murphy in an event that's open to the public. Last night in New England, the Patriots losing to the Texans 20-9. The Patriots are coming to Green Bay next week for joint practice sessions. We're in Cincinnati, where the Packers take on the Bengals tonight here at Paycor Stadium. Kickoff at 6 o'clock. Quarterback Jordan Love says he thinks he's going to see some playing time.
Yeah, no, I'm excited. I definitely want to be out there, get some reps, just to get that feeling of being back out there, getting live reps. I definitely think it's important.
Wide receiver Christian Watson told us on the practice field he thinks the offense learned a lot from this week's sessions against the Bengals defense.
It was super competitive out here. You know, every rep out here is like a game rep. I mean, just taking advantage of that and just going at it each and every play. You know, obviously, you know, they're, you know, a great team. We obviously want to, you know, we have goals that we want to achieve and, you know, make it to this year. So I think we did well. So I think we're in a good spot right now. Let's keep on growing.
Bengals head coach Zach Taylor on why he's excited his younger players will get a chance to face Green Bay tonight.
Well, it's just nice to not go against our own team. There's so much familiarity there that it's time for a change. And so it's good to have the Packers come to town, a really good team that we've got a lot of respect for. And so it'll be fun for our guys to ramp it up and get a chance to compete.
That's Bengals head coach Zach Taylor. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
After 8 o'clock on this Friday morning, it is the 11th day of August, and welcome into the Stu Daniels Show. I am your host, Stu Daniels. It's almost the weekend, and weather today, kind of wide-ranging. Temperatures only expected to get into the low 70s way up north, and into the mid-80s if you're down in the southern part of the state. La Crosse today, mostly cloudy in the morning, sunny in the afternoon, high around 86. Same thing in Richland Center, mostly cloudy this morning, sunny this afternoon, high around 86. In Eau Claire today, mostly cloudy in the morning, sunny in the afternoon, and a chance of rain after 5 p.m., high around 84. A similar forecast for Amory, mostly cloudy in the morning, sunny in the afternoon, chance of rain after 5 p.m. with a high around 82 degrees. And then up in Hayward, mostly cloudy throughout the day with a chance of rain until about 3 p.m. And high today in Hayward expected to be around 75 degrees. Hey, in sports, the Brewers were off yesterday. They start a 9-game road trip tonight on the south side of Chicago against the White Sox. The Brewers are currently in first place in the National League Central, 2.5 games ahead of the Cubs and the Reds. So what's going on in the news today? On the headlines, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel is reporting that the Brewers may consider moving if they can't work out a deal soon with state and local officials to fund improvements at American Family Field. And the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources is updating the rules for wolf hunting and trapping rules. Wisconsin lawmakers are considering a law to standardize fatality review boards, which study specific types of deaths to try to prevent them in the future. And Republican lawmakers and Republican groups are moving to defend Wisconsin's legislative maps and the banning of absentee drop boxes. So I think where we will start today
is with a story from the New York Times about our former president, Mr. Donald Trump, and the fact that he's hurting for money these days. This billionaire who said when he first ran for president that you wouldn't be able to corrupt him because he's got so much money. He won't need money from anybody, so he won't do any favors for anybody because he doesn't need their money. Well, we all know it didn't work out that way. And now he is asking for money from anybody and everybody. I personally get emails from Donald Trump throughout the day, several every day, asking me to contribute even just a dollar, just a dollar. Some of them ask for way more than that. Some of them ask for $47. But it just depends on which one you read at any given time throughout the day. But this story in the New York Times says spiraling legal bills threaten Trump with a cash crunch. The former president's political orbit, including the super PAC that backs him, is already spending more than it is taking in, an unusual trajectory this far out from an election. So I wonder if this is going to prompt some of our conservative listeners to hurry up and send him more cash. Well, that's what he's asking you to do. Donald Trump's legal problems aren't just piling up. His legal bills are too. New financial reports show that the former president's various political committees and the super PAC backing him have used roughly 30 cents of every dollar spent so far this year on legal related costs. The total amounts to more than $27 million in legal fees and other investigation related bills in the first 6 months of this year, according to a New York Times analysis of federal records. That $27 million in legal costs includes Mr. Trump paying at least eight law firms more than $1 million each in the first half of 2023, part of a sizable set of legal billings expected to spiral upward in the coming months as his overlapping criminal cases wind their way toward courtrooms in New York, Florida, and Washington, D.C. The new disclosures revealed the remarkable degree to which Trump's political and legal cash are intermingled, much like his own political and legal fate. Trump's complex political orbit is already spending more than it is taking in and tapping into money it raised years ago, an unusual trajectory this far out from an election. And the burn rate raises questions about whether such an approach is untenable or whether Trump will eventually need to dip into his own fortune to pay for his lawyers, his 2024 campaign, or both. It is a step that the famously tight-fisted Trump has resisted taking, even as his advisors have begun planning behind the scenes for a potential political cash crunch months before the primaries begin. Trump's not known for long-term planning, so it remains unclear how much he has focused on the intricate challenges of financing his campaign in the coming months. Some close to him say they are reassured by the fact that if he becomes the presidential nominee again, he can rely on the Republican Party to provide financial support. Quote, President Trump continues to be the campaign fundraising leader due to the support from voters who recognize this as an illegal witch hunt, said Stephen Chung, a spokesman for Mr. Trump, in a statement. As President Trump has said, he will spend whatever it takes to defeat the deep state and crooked Joe Biden, end quote. All told, the political committees that Trump directly controls, along with the independently operated super PAC devoted exclusively to helping him, are spending more than they raised so far in 2023, largely because of his legal expenditures, the filings show. Those entities brought in $67.2 million in new donations in the first half of the year and spent about $90 million in the same period. Most of the money that went to legal fees did not come from new donations, the records show. Save America, the PAC doing the bulk of the legal spending, raised much of its funds in the aftermath of the 2020 election and plunged $16 million into legal expenses in 2022, it's nearly been bled dry. Quote, "This is going to be an incredibly expensive proposition," said Ben Braffman, a prominent criminal defense lawyer who is not involved in Trump's cases. Of Mr. Trump's three indictments, he added, quote, "Not only is he now dealing with three separate jurisdictions, and nobody really knows which case is going to come first, but they all need to be investigated, researched, and prepared at the same time by his attorneys." The fundraising records show that the indictments have been a boon in many ways, being charged with crimes turbocharged Trump's fundraising, at least temporarily. A breathtaking 40% of every dollar he raised online in the first 6 months of 2023 came in the 2 one-week periods around his first two indictments. The Times analysis found, peaking at nearly $4 million the day of his first arraignment. The surge was a sign of both the degree to which his fundraising had been lagging before the first indictment and the intensity of the support it unleashed. So the more indictments, the more cash he brings in. Entering July, Trump had more cash on hand in his campaign committee, $22.5 million, than at the start of the year and more than any one of the rest of the 2024 presidential candidates. And Trump continues to fundraise heavily off the criminal charges, with small online donors giving at a pace that dwarfs that of every other rival, nearly $46 million in the first half of the year, with an average donation of under $35. But across the broader Trump sphere, signs of fiscal strain are showing. In one unusual transaction, Trump's Save America PAC asked for a refund on the $60 million it had transferred last year to the Super PAC, Make America Great Again, Inc., that was expected to chiefly pay for television ads. Already, $12.25 million has been returned to the account that mostly pays for legal bills. In another move, Trump began redirecting more of every dollar raised into that same account. Mr. Chung, the spokesman for Trump, accused Biden and the Justice Department special counsel Jack Smith of using the government's unlimited resources to try to force the Trump campaign to spend to defend innocent Americans who have been targeted, end quote. Trump's 2024 campaign committee, which is separate from both the Save America PAC and the MAGA Inc. Super PAC, has not technically spent any money on investigation-related lawyers, and some experts believe doing so would be forbidden. His Save America PAC has covered such bills. But the complex web of entities that make up how a modern-day presidential bid is financed is often perceived as one big campaign apparatus, even though the rules governing how each entity spends are different. For example, campaign finance rules prevent Trump from directing the spending by the Super PAC. Trump's attorney fees are only expected to rise in the coming months as he hurtles toward two federal criminal trials, one in Florida, one in Washington, D.C., and a third in Manhattan. He's likely to face a fourth criminal indictment in Georgia, and he has multiple civil trials in the coming months, too. So, are you going to send him any money? Am I going to send him any money? I don't think so. Got to take a quick break. Stick around. You're tuned in to the Stu Daniels Show. He took a look around, gave a little pep talk, said I'm with you, then he took a little walk. Tell me, how can a poor bastard such times in love? Canal and the levee's gone to hell. Martha, get me my 16 gauge and some dry shells.
It's so hot. Wait. Now it's going to rain? It is summer in Wisconsin.
As much as we love it, we love to hate it too. Find a forecast you can count on along with the in-depth details you need only from the Civic Media Weather Team.
These extended conditions have led us into a flash drought. Sitting in these above average temperatures with minimal rain has swiftly altered the local climate.
Your weather and more for your part of Wisconsin.
On your local Civic Media radio station and streaming on the Civic Media app.
From the kennel to the coop, whatever the season, Fleet Farm has everything to keep your animals happy and healthy. From training your pup to sit season, to mastering those retrieval skills season. From clipping your horse for competition season, to keeping the backyard birds well-fed season. And of course, loving your pets like family season. There's a reason people say, if Fleet Farm doesn't have it, you don't need it. Because we have it all. Fleet Farm. Built for real life.
This Saturday, enjoy the first ever Amory Price is Right event. Shop at local stores from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. for a chance to win some amazing prizes, like an all-expense-paid trip and a free car. Visit Amory August 12th for a fun day of shopping, food trucks, and live music. Amory Price is Right. Shop big, win bigger.
Missed your favorite show? It's easy to find it wherever you listen to podcasts. Apple, Google, or civicmedia.us.
Here's your updated forecast. Chance for scattered storms today. Otherwise, sunshine mixed with clouds at times. High temperatures reach up to 82. Winds out of the west, 8 to 15 miles per hour. Partly cloudy tonight. Chance for scattered storms. Lows dip down to about 55. Daytime highs approaching 79. Tomorrow, mainly clear. Chance for scattered storms Sunday. Chance for scattered showers on Monday. I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley on Lake Air WLAK, 1260 AM. Right now, 66.
This summer, Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK has a new starting lineup. Beginning at 6, Up North News. Then at 8, Stu Daniels on Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK.
Welcome back to the Stu Daniels Show on a Friday morning. We've got 69 degrees in Richland Center right now. It's 68 degrees in La Crosse. Both areas looking for highs today around 86 degrees. And just before the break, we were discussing funding for the presidential campaign by our former president, Donald Trump. The fact that he's spending way more money right now on his lawyer's fees than he's actually taking in. And that's why he is asking his supporters for donations. Most of his donations coming in less than $35. They're coming from just regular people people who are sending in money from their Social Security or pension or from their paycheck. And that's one way to get money, right? By asking your supporters for small dollar donations. But as we know, there are billionaires funding lots of candidates, but also we're finding out more and more every day about how billionaires have been giving not money contributions, but giving in-kind donations to our Supreme Court justices. And not all of the Supreme Court justices, but the most conservative ones. Every day we're finding out more and more about Clarence Thomas and the trips that he's taken. I think it's now up to 36 or 38 trips over the past 30 years that have been funded by billionaires. This is a real serious issue. You know, do we want our Supreme Court justices and or our lawmakers to receive cash donations or any kind of contributions, even if it's a vacation? Do we want them to receive those things from billionaires? I mean, if they do take these vacations, or if it's a lawmaker, the cash contribution, when they take those, are those billionaires expecting anything in return? Well, of course they are. That's why they give them that money. And by the way, if you want to join us, if you have an opinion on anything we're discussing this morning, feel free to call in. I'd like to hear what you have to say. The phone number is 715-388-7155. And you can also send me an email message if you'd like to. My email address is stewmanradio@gmail.com. Stu is spelled with a U. And excuse me, I just did receive an email message from a listener named Stephen, who says that he sent me a link to a story that we should discuss here about what's going on with the Supreme Court justices. This story is from The Hill. It's by Nan Aaron. This is an opinion piece. Nan Aaron, I believe, is a lecturer at Georgetown Law School. And she is saying that it's time to investigate the shadow network of billionaires funding the Supreme Court justices. And this year has been a disaster for the Supreme Court's legitimacy and public faith in its 6-3 conservative majority. Near daily revelations of unseemly financial relationships between the court's conservative justices and their billionaire patrons were hallmarks of another blockbuster precedent-busting term. Meanwhile, Senate Republicans have obstructed Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Dick Durbin's attempts at exercising oversight through Judiciary Committee hearings, and Congress has failed to pressure the court into adopting a formal code of conduct. In April, Chief Justice John Roberts very publicly stonewalled Senate inquiries into the court's ethical practices, undercutting his credibility and enhancing perceptions that today's court is corrupt, partisan to its core, and unaccountable to any other branch of government. Is that the way we want it? Is that the way it should be? 8:28 right now. Got to take a break. Stick around. You're tuned in to the Stu Daniels Show.
We can lean on.
Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK has a new starting lineup. At 10, As Goes Wisconsin. Then at noon, Civic Media Network News. On Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK.
ABC News, I'm Justin Finch. Complete devastation in the Hawaiian town of Lahaina. Engulfed in historic wildfires, the mayor of Maui, Richard Besson Jr., telling ABC there's nothing left and fearing the current number of dead, at least 55, will rise.
The folks that we have located were found outside of the buildings, either on the streets or the sidewalks where they were found. And we don't know exactly. Obviously, the police, the Coast Guard, the National Guard were doing those recoveries. So we haven't yet gone into any of the buildings.
The fire's about 80% contained. The U.S. brokering a deal to bring five Iranian Americans home in exchange for roughly $6 billion in assets frozen in South Korea. ABC's Martha Raddatz.
It will likely take at least 4 or 5 weeks for that money to come through and the prisoners hopefully brought back to the U.S. The White House saying the negotiations remain delicate.
This is ABC News.
Looking for more local programming? Check out our website, civicmedia.us, to see our entire lineup.
Here's what you need to know in northwestern Wisconsin. Barron County officials said the Marathon County Bomb Squad was called in to get rid of dynamite found near Rice Lake on Wednesday. The Sheriff's Department said an outbuilding had to be destroyed as well due to it containing materials that could easily catch on fire or explode. According to a release, the property owners had no idea there was dynamite in the outbuilding. A Cumberland man was sentenced to 4 years of probation for stealing rebate checks while he worked as a mail carrier. Joshua Kopis is accused of swiping 30 Menards rebate checks totaling $4,500 from people on his route. Kopis pleaded guilty to mail theft by a postal employee and will have to pay all of the money back. A Neillsville man was sentenced to prison for killing a highway worker while he was driving drunk. Ray Neumuller will spend 10 years in prison for killing Russell Opelt and seriously injuring David Murphy while they were working to remove a tree in the road near Greenwood in 2021. Neumuller pleaded guilty to the charges of homicide and causing injury by intoxicated use of a vehicle back in April. For Civic Media News, I'm Jimmy Kuska.
It doesn't hurt, feels good to help. And when you give blood, you provide a life-saving difference for others. The need doesn't take a summer break. So we have a challenge for you, started by Civic Media's Earl Ingram.
Congratulations to all those people and all of you who donate blood.
Take a selfie while giving blood, then post it along with hashtag CivicPints. Give blood and you could get a prize, too. Find challenge details and a donation center near you at civicmedia.us/giveblood. civicmedia.us/giveblood.
Civic Media isn't just another broadcast company.
We're your neighbors. We bleed green and gold.
And we love nothing more than to help fellow Wisconsinites succeed.
Whether your business wants to advertise to your local community or the entire state, Civic Media can help. Find out more at civicmedia.us.
Hail insurance is a critical part of your risk management plan. Here at Ag Country Farm Credit Services, our loan officers and insurance specialists work together to give you the best combination of risk management tools and hail insurance options. We'll analyze coverage levels and compare them to the cost of production and the crop revenue potential. Then we'll customize a hail plan to your specific operation. Contact your local Ag Country office to learn more.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
I have Corrine Hendrickson, part of the Wisconsin Early Childhood Action Needed group.
The Joint Finance Committee, again in the middle of the night, took that out and said, well, hey, you have all this money coming from the federal government. Why don't you use that to create this program? Well, guess what? We proved it worked. Wages went up $2 an hour. There actually are a couple extra childcare businesses open now than there were about a year ago. And that's going to stop. Just Monday, we lost two.
Weekday morning, 6 till 8.
On your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Pretty women out walking with gorillas down my street. I'm staring while my coffee goes cold. Look over there. Well, there's a lady that I used to know. She's married now or engaged or something, so I'm told. Is she real? Tonight's the night when I go to all the parties down my street. I wash my hair and I kid myself, I look real smooth. Look over there,
well,
there, here comes Jeannie with her new boyfriend. They say the looks don't count for much, so there goes your proof. Is she really going out with him? Is she really gonna take him home tonight? Is she really going out with him? Sometimes if my eyes don't deceive me, there's something going wrong around here.
Yeah, there's something going wrong around here. Welcome back to the Stu Daniels Show on a Friday morning, 8:35. Right now, we've got 64 degrees in Amory. It's 68 degrees in Eau Claire. And if you'd like to join us on the phone, if you have an opinion about anything we're discussing today, feel free. The phone number is 715-388-7155. And just before the break, we were discussing this story in The Hill about what's going on with the Supreme Court justices, the fact that we are finding out now that some of them, especially Clarence Thomas, have been taking millions of dollars worth of gifts, let's call them, vacations, tickets to big-time sporting events, those kinds of things. And he hasn't been reporting all of this. This story so far has talked about the fact that John Roberts, Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, stonewalling Senate inquiries into the court's ethical practices. And I got to this part here where it says nearly all of the court's ethical scandals are tied to the Federalist Society. Its leader, Leonard Leo, and his shadowy network of Republican billionaires, nonprofit groups, and consulting firms following the Federalist Society's money trail raises serious questions about how the Supreme Court's conservative justices fund their lifestyles, their fidelity to government ethics laws, and the possible influence Republican billionaires wield over Supreme Court decisions. Aping Chief Justice Roberts, Leo is refusing to cooperate with Senate investigators' requests for information. To restore faith in the court, the Senate needs to use its full investigatory powers to compel answers from Leo, the Federalist Society, and its donors about their financial influence over the Supreme Court. Launched by Yale and University of Chicago law students in 1982, the Federalist Society was founded to showcase conservative legal scholarship and organize, recruit, educate, and mobilize conservative law students. Students and lawyers attended meetings with conservative judges and justices. Connections were made that led to clerkships and judgeships. By 1987, a co-chairman of a Federalist Society convention proclaimed its work would eventually lead to the placement of Republicans in high-ranking positions across all three branches of government. Corporate donations came flowing in. Today, the group boasts a deep network of billionaire donors cultivated by Leonard Leo, who is best known for selecting all three of former President Trump's Supreme Court nominees, as well as more than 200 lower court judges, many of whom are far-right extremists. Leo also made headlines after receiving a highly questionable $1.6 billion donation from a friendly billionaire, perhaps the largest political donation in United States history. For decades, Leo and the Federalist Society hosted events allowing Federalist Society judges, corporate executives, corporate lawyers, and billionaires to mingle. Supreme Court's Republican justices are frequent guests, while reporters and members of the public are barred from attending. Given several Republican justices' relaxed attitudes about capitalizing off of their connections to the ultra-wealthy, The stench of impropriety from these soirees has become inescapable. For over 20 years, Justice Clarence Thomas and his wife Ginny Thomas were gifted luxury travel from Harlan Crow, a Republican billionaire closely connected to Leo, who may have used these trips to commit tax fraud. Crow also paid private school tuition for Thomas's grandnephew. He owns the home where Thomas's mother lives and partially paid for Leonard Leo's public relations campaign promoting Justice Thomas. The Washington Post also uncovered cash payments secretly funneled to Ginny Thomas by Leonard Leo. These payments and gifts were kept off Justice Thomas's federal disclosures in what appear to be major violations of government ethics laws. Leonard Leo also helped to organize an undisclosed luxury vacation for Justice Samuel Alito, paid for by Republican billionaire Paul Singer. The vacation included lavish travel on Singer's private jet, valued at more than $200,000, free lodging at a high-end Alaskan fishing lodge, valued at more than $1,000 a night, and complimentary meals including $1,000 wine. Let me ask you this, listener. When was the last time you had a bottle of wine that was $1,000? Singer has had interests before the court in the past, so he's giving this money to the justices, but he's got stuff before the court that they have to decide on. You think that his gifts to these justices has any influence on their decisions? This piece goes on. This op-ed piece in The Hill says, in 2005, the court declined to hear a case involving Trammell Crow Residential, a company that Crow Holdings holds a minority interest in. Thomas and Alito failed to recuse themselves from those cases. Even after the court's Republican justices' self-interested gutting of U.S. anti-corruption laws, no other government employee could get away with such blatant profiteering. And based on what has come out, it's reasonable to assume that these ethical violations are just the tip of the iceberg. To protect the court, the Senate must fully investigate Leonard Leo and the Federalist Society, including by issuing subpoenas. Failing to do so will erode a long-standing principle of American democracy that no public official is above the law. Inaction will also signal that government officials can openly flout ethics laws and use their positions to enrich themselves and their families. Just as long as they are powerful enough to get away with it, that is. And that piece, that op-ed piece in The Hill, is by Nan Aaron, a distinguished lecturer in residence at Georgetown Law Center and founder and former president of Alliance for Justice. And thanks to our listener, Stephen, who sent me the link to that piece at thehill.com. So we've got 8:43 right now. And I wanted to get to this story I mentioned at the beginning of the show in the headlines about the Milwaukee Brewers. Is there a chance that the Brewers could leave Milwaukee, leave Wisconsin? Well, this headline from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel says the Brewers could consider a move in 2030 if a funding package isn't in place by this fall. Team executives are contemplating a move because without a funding deal, the stadium district may not have enough money to cover improvements to the stadium. So will the Milwaukee Brewers look to relocate if the state stadium financing package fails? This piece in the Journal Sentinel is from Molly Beck, and it was posted 4 hours ago. It says here, the Milwaukee Brewers could start looking for a new home this fall if state and local officials fail to reach agreement by then on a taxpayer-funded package to fund improvements to American Family Field required in the team's lease with the state. Sources say a process that might lead them to the boom towns of Charlotte, North Carolina, or Nashville, Tennessee. months after Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers proposed spending $290 million in taxpayer dollars to help ensure the Brewers stay in Wisconsin, and after the Major League Baseball Commissioner Rob Manfred urged lawmakers to act quickly, a deal has not yet materialized. That has pushed Brewers officials to a point of contemplating whether communities with fast-growing populations and no Major League Baseball teams might be options if state and local officials don't produce enough funding for stadium renovations, sources with knowledge of the dynamic told the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Those renovations are required to maintain the terms of the team's lease with the Southeast Wisconsin Professional Baseball Park District. The Brewers' lease with the state-created stadium district does not expire until the end of 2030. Team executives are giving thought to leaving because without a funding deal, the stadium district may not have enough money to cover immediate recommended improvements to American Family Field. And because it could take years to facilitate a move if the Brewers reach that point. Such talk also could pressure state legislators into acting. Quote, the Brewers genuinely want to stay. It is only a question of whether they'll be able to with the stadium district broke, a source familiar with negotiations told the Journal Sentinel. But Milwaukee losing the Brewers remains unlikely, as lawmakers and Evers are still supportive of putting together a package to keep the team in town. Also, such relocations are rare for MLB teams. Rick Schlesinger, president of business operations for the Brewers, said the team wants, quote, Major League Baseball to remain in Wisconsin for the next generation and beyond. We will keep working with both sides of the aisle to find a creative solution to ensure the stadium district can meet its obligations and sign a generational lease extension at American Family Field, he said in a statement. In May, the Journal Sentinel obtained information showing immediate ballpark improvements recommended by a study commissioned by the Milwaukee Brewers and vetted by the State Department of Administration, totaled $78 million over 2 years. That exceeds the stadium district's $70 million renovations fund. Tim Sheehy, stadium district board chair, acknowledged the study's recommendations for front-loading much of that proposed spending, but the district can only operate under its current lease and not under an assumed long-term extension, he said. Sheehy drew this analogy. A homeowner staying in their house for 20 years will pay for major improvements, while a homeowner planning to sell in a few years might forego such an expense. So will the Brewers stay in Milwaukee? Let's hope so. Got to take a break. It's a quick one. Stick around. You're tuned in to the Stu Daniels Show. Just sits at home and rolls her spastic eyes, but every weekend through the door come words of wisdom from the world outside. If you want to know about the bishop and the actress,
this Saturday the Price is Right is coming to Amory. Shop at local stores from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. for a chance to win some amazing prizes, like a free trip or a new car. Visit Amory August 12th for a fun day of shopping, food trucks, and live music. Amory Price is Right. Shop big, win bigger.
Larry, it's your mom. Did you know the Civic Media Network covers the whole state of Wisconsin? They can help your business get the word out, whether you want to reach a smidge of folks or just want the whole kit and caboodle. Call 608-819-8255. Okay then, bye.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
A guy named Bill out in Econowoc. Bill's got some thoughts on that.
Yeah, thanks for talking about what you're talking about right now. Your station, you raise the bar high for integrity. You are a community radio station, which means you look out for all the citizens in the state of Wisconsin.
Daily conversations about Wisconsin's latest headlines and stories. Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
Weekday mornings 6 till 8.
On your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
I have Corrine Hendrickson, part of the Wisconsin Early Childhood Action Needed Group.
We spend $500 on our infants and toddlers on average. If you go to the other countries, you're talking about $11,000 on average in Europe and the other developed countries. It makes a difference. They end up spending less on their K-12 system. They end up spending less on their colleges. They end up spending less on jail.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
Weekday mornings 6 till 8.
On your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Here's your updated forecast. Partly cloudy skies this afternoon with a chance for scattered storms. Daytime highs approaching 82. Westerly winds 8 to 15 miles per hour. Chance for scattered thunderstorms tonight. Lows level off around 55, partly cloudy. High temperatures reach up to 79 tomorrow. Mainly sunny skies. Chance for scattered thunderstorms Sunday. Chance for scattered rain showers on Monday. I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley on Lake Air, WLAK, 1260 AM. Right now, 68.
This summer, Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK has a new starting lineup. 4 to 6, The Devil's Advocates with Tom Ankrud. Then at 6, The Maggie Dawn Show. WLAK.
Somewhere 8:51 right now. Welcome back to the Stu Daniels Show. 68 degrees in La Crosse right now. It's 61 degrees way up in Hayward, and Hayward looking for a high today around 76. La Crosse 86. And if you want to join us on the phones, feel free. 715-388-7155 is the phone number. Hey, did you hear about this story where a search warrant was given to Twitter? Because they, Jack Smith's investigation wanted to get all of the information about Donald Trump's Twitter account. Of course, much of it is public, you know, on the Twitter tweets. Evidently, he doesn't use that much anymore. But in addition to the public viewable tweets, there are also direct messages and other information that a search warrant would be needed for to achieve or to receive. But I have a story here from Vanity Fair. This is the Levin report by Bess Levin, posted yesterday. It says Elon Musk's Twitter wanted to tell Trump about a sealed search warrant and potentially screw up. It says here, F up, can't say the word on the radio. But they wanted to screw up Jack Smith's criminal investigation. The subheadline says a judge feared that notifying Trump could give him an opportunity to destroy evidence or flee the prosecution. Now, do you think there's a chance that Donald Trump would want to destroy evidence? This piece starts out by saying last November, Elon Musk did Donald Trump a very big solid when he lifted the Twitter ban that was imposed on the ex-president in January of 2021 for the violence he'd incited. Sure, Trump has not actually returned to the site in the months since, preferring instead to unload his thoughts on Truth Social, the social network he founded after being kicked off of Twitter. But the gesture was still there. And as it turns out, Musk's Twitter tried to do Trump an even bigger favor shortly thereafter. A court ruling unsealed on Wednesday revealed that Twitter, now called X, was forced to pay a $350,000 fine after it failed to comply in a timely manner with a search warrant ordering it to turn over records from Trump's account. According to the Washington Post, while attorneys for the company did not generally oppose special counsel Jack Smith's request, they argued against the gag order it came with, which prevented them from alerting Donald Trump, claiming that handing over the records without telling Trump was a violation of the First Amendment. The company argued in court that it should not have to turn over anything until the gag order issue was settled. On February 7th, U.S. District Court Judge Beryl Howe found Twitter in contempt and gave the company until 5 p.m. that day to turn over the records in question, fining it $50,000 per day and doubling each day it failed to do so. The company turned over the information 3 days later. Of course, Jack Smith had a good reason for not wanting Twitter to get on the horn and let Trump know it had turned information over to the government. And it's probably that he was in the middle of his criminal investigation and likely didn't trust that the former guy wouldn't do something crazy and or illegal as a result. Indeed, Judge Howell ruled in March to uphold the non-disclosure order, finding there were reasonable grounds to believe that disclosing the warrant to the ex-president, quote, would seriously jeopardize the ongoing investigation by giving him an opportunity to destroy evidence, change patterns of behavior, or notify Confederates. Howell also noted that Trump might flee from prosecution. Twitter appealed her decision to the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia, which upheld Howell's ruling in July. Since Trump was formally charged on August 1st in the 2020 election case, the appellate court's decision was unsealed. And while we don't know exactly which records Jack Smith's team was seeking, the grand jury indictment against him gives a pretty good idea as it cites 18 of his tweets, with 7 from the day of the insurrection, as the Post notes. Speaking of social media missives from the ex-president on Friday, he wrote on Truth Social in all capital letters, "If you go after me, I'm coming after you," which prosecutors took to mean he intends to intimidate government witnesses. And the, I guess that's the end of the story in Vanity Fair, but that gives you some explanation about why Twitter received the $350,000 fine, because they weren't willing to cooperate with the investigation. So we're almost at the top of the hour. I've got a top of the hour news break coming up. Stick around, and if you want to join us on the phone, feel free, 715-388-7155. You're tuned in to the Stu Daniels Show.
Then I want to ride that giant slide over there. So if you've got 11 days to spare, won't you come with me to the Wisconsin State Fair? Won't you come with me to the Wisconsin? The great state of Wisconsin State Fair.
There's something for everyone at the Wisconsin State Fair, presented by U.S. Cellular, August 3rd through the 13th.
The RPG came through the belly of the aircraft. We don't talk about the female combat wounded. These are our daughters and our sisters and our mothers. Wounded Warrior Project came into my life and taught me how to stand back up and get back in the fight. The truth is, I think we all have this strength inside of us, but until you're tested, you just don't know it's there.
See how Wounded Warrior Project empowers women veterans like Beth by visiting woundedwarriorproject.org/empowerwomenvets.
You're listening to WLAK 1260 AM Amory and WBZH 910 AM W245 CT Hayward.
Always streaming on the Civic ABC Media.